The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
A great court and so burdened with a, well, absolutely incompetent president. I don't know if Kurt agrees with me on both of those statements, but we will find out shortly. Take it away, and thank you, Kurt Schlichter.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt, and I do agree with you. Hi there, I am Kurt Schlichter, retired United States Army colonel, noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, senior columnist at townhall.com, and the author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which I am going to shamelessly promote because it comes out on Tuesday. You should get it if you're interested in the fate of our country, the risks we face ahead, including national divorce, civil war and conflict, even China. We'll be talking a lot about China today because a lot's happening in the Pacific. And let me get right into the news. Very sad news to report. Former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was assassinated by a gunman in Japan today. He was shot with and we're still getting details. Apparently a homemade double barrel shotgun of some sort. He was wounded gravely and he apparently died. This is a tragedy, of course, for Japan, but also for the United States. Former Prime Minister Abe was a great Japanese patriot. He stood up to China. He was a loyal ally of the United States. Condolences are pouring in from America and from around the world. Former President Trump called him a great friend of personally and of our country. It's a sad day for Japan. Our thoughts and prayers are with that great ally of ours. Not much is known about the assassin. There is some information that he may have been a former member of the Japanese armed forces. It's unclear. Now, Japan, while it is not a gun country, it's very hard to get a weapon there. There are very few gun deaths. It does have a history of political assassinations. We're going to be finding out more details. We may find out during the Hugh Hewitt radio program. And when we do, we will bring those details to you. Here in the United States, we're still dealing with the fallout of the resignation of Boris Johnson. We're watching what's happening there because there are parallels. There are parallels from what's happening in Great Britain to what's happening here. Of course, Boris Johnson took a giant mandate and completely screwed it up through fecklessness and incompetence. And it's not like Boris Johnson is not a smart cat. He is a smart cat. He apparently doesn't own a comb, but he is not a dumb guy. But what he did is he came in with an enormous mandate. A mandate for change, a mandate for resistance to, for lack of a better word, the globalist agenda. The kind of transnational, fashionable, you know, climate change, open borders kind of thing. And he said, no, I'm going, you know, the British people have voted for Brexit. We are going to leave the EU. And he did that. But he stopped doing what his mandate promised. And that mandate gave him an overwhelming majority in the parliament. He turned very, for lack of a better word, liberal. In an American context, he would probably be a blue dog Democrat. The problem for Boris Johnson, besides not being what he promised to be, well, he's also a poor leader. And when Jerry Hendricks comes in, Navy captain, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk some leadership and leadership lessons. But one lesson is you can't have a leader who does one thing yet tells you to do another. So while he's locking down Britain, and Boris Johnson was a big vaccine mandate guy, he was a big lockdown guy, he was a big COVID hardcore guy, and he's out partying with his pals. As other people were locked down, as they couldn't visit their family in nursing homes, as they couldn't bury their family, as they couldn't go out. And he's, pouring champagne with his buddies at 10 Downing Street. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. And the wolves started to gather as he became weaker and weaker and weaker. Now, there's a parallel there. Joe Biden is becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. If this was the Serengeti, he'd be the new with the broken hoof. And the hyenas are circling, taking a nip here and there. We're starting to hear it. Maybe he's a little old. Maybe he shouldn't run again. You know, you can hear the murmuring. Eventually, the dam's going to break and people are going to say it. He's a desiccated, senile old weirdo, and we will get creamed in 2024, whether it's Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump. And folks, the word on the street from people who know is that the president is looking to run. So that is the latest gossip I have heard from my many sources. The president is looking to run again. And Joe Biden's not going to win again. Joe Biden's a mess. But fortunately, he's got something helping him. He's got an ace in the hole. And of course, that's Kamala Harris. Have you seen Blazing Saddles, where Cleavon Little, Dwayne, you remember Blazing Saddles, right? The documentary from Mel Brooks,
the docudrama from Mel Brooks, one of my favorite movies.
And yes. Of course, Cleavon, the townspeople are about to lynch Cleavon Little, and he pulls out the gun, sticks it to his head, and he goes, "I'll do it, I'll do it." He's like, "He's crazy enough." He'll go ahead and do it. He's crazy enough to do it. And that's Kamala Harris.
Yes,
she's the six shooter. I'll do it. You take me out. You got her.
There's lots of talk out there. Well, maybe they can force her off the ticket. That's not how any of this works.
Well, Joe Biden is very happy to have Kamala Harris around. Cut number two, he introduces her. This is great.
Yeah, this is grand.
This is amazing.
Cut two.
I want to thank the Vice President Harris and the Second Gentleman for allowing us to join them. No, for joining us.
They were in the East Room in the White House. Now, you know, she doesn't actually live there. He does. She's at the Naval Observatory.
Yes.
But he's happy to join them.
I'm going to say it, and I don't care whose toes I'm stepping on. I think Joe Biden may be slowing down a bit. Is that crazy talk?
I think he has maybe 3-4 good hours a day, and that's it. The rest of the time, it's like overdue for him.
I don't even think he has that. I think he's in a perma-lid.
In no way that nobody is going to leave this town. Hell, I was born here, and I was raised here, and that gummit, I'm going to die here.
He's the cranky old prospector.
Joe Biden is Gabby Johnson.
Gabby Johnson, the cranky old prospector. Yes. he should be running a chuck wagon somewhere. Now, Dwayne, you cut clips for me. When I come in here, I get a long sheet of clips.
I cut clips for everybody.
You cut clips.
Yes.
Today, I'm having trouble deciding which is the stupidest statement by some Democrat politician. So I want to have a countdown.
You want to
that's
do
a good
what,
idea?
Top three, top five.
Oh, I got a bunch. Why don't we start with Representative Cynthia Axne, which sounds like somebody who can't pronounce acne.
Yes.
She's from Iowa. She's going to get creamed. Because Iowa's turned hard red.
I think so, too. Cut 19.
Cut 19.
What is your messaging for all of that, and how do you propose solutions? What's going to make this stuff better?
Sure. Well, the unfortunate thing is that when the Republicans don't have anything good to run on. So what they're running on are narratives that they believe will scare people. Some of it's incredibly misleading. And certainly some of it isn't even remotely the president's fault or anything in Congress.
Okay. Who's the president, allegedly?
The desiccated old fossil.
Desiccated old fossil. And is gas really expensive and inflation going through the roof?
It seems to be.
Okay. So what she's essentially saying is it's a false narrative.
Yes.
That gas is really expensive going to a roof. Who Who's supposed to make everything better as president? That's kind of the implied promise.
That would be
crusty, right?
And
he's not getting it done, right?
This is the Dick Durbin line. Dick Durbin yesterday tried to say, the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, they're not talking about the important stuff. They're trying to focus on the discrete issues like the economy. He actually said that.
Okay. Maybe we should focus on my democracy. Well, we elected the Democrats to fix things. They haven't fixed it. Looks like they're not cutting it. They're not getting it done. Oh, we got more clips of dummies coming up. Get my book. We'll be back. The Fall and Rise of America. We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. This is guest host Kurt Schlichter, author of the new book, We'll Be Back, Fall and Rise of America. Retired United States Army colonel. In a second, I'm going to be joined by another 06. Captain Jerry Hendricks, who I hope to see in Washington, D.C. when I do a book tour. We're having another influencer gathering where we hung out the last time. It is a sad day for America and for Japan. I want to read what former President Trump wrote on Truth Social. Absolutely devastating news that former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan, a truly great man and leader, has been shot and is in very serious condition. And let me add, since it's been confirmed that he has died of his wounds, he was a true friend of mine and, more importantly, America. This is a tremendous blow to the wonderful people of Japan who had loved and admired him so much. We are all praying for Shinzo and his beautiful family. And, our condolences, all America's condolences, go out to the family and to our ally, Japan. Jerry Hendricks, Japan is a key American ally in the Middle East, in the Pacific. What is the effect of the murder of Shinzo Abe, former prime minister, going to be on American-Japanese relationship and confronting China?
Well, I think it's going to cause us to step back and have a moment to focus on what Shinzo Abe accomplished during his tenure as prime minister. He's the longest-serving prime minister in modern Japanese history. He was also a very controversial prime minister in that he argued for a more realistic approach to the world. Abe championed the idea of growing Japan's military. He wanted to significantly modify Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution, which made Japan essentially a pacifist nation. He wanted Japan to become a more realistic nation. He wanted to increase its defense spending above the 1% of GDP that it had been at for essentially the entire post-World War II era. He wanted to grow to 1% and 2%, to even higher than that. He was the person who authorized the Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force to create aircraft carriers again, although they still call them large destroyers. I think that's more just, tomfoolery. But the fact is he wanted Japan to become a realistic security partner for the United States in the Pacific, and he had great fear and of China and the threat that China posed. Abe was also the author of the concept which we call the Quad, the idea that there would be some sort of a informal or even formal security relationship between Japan, Australia, the United States, and India. Abe reached out to India to try to bring them into this conversation. I think it's also important to understand Abe's impact upon the Japanese economy, and that's one of the reasons he could do all these things, is that he freed up the Japanese economy by deregulating it and easing interest rates as well as taxes within the country, took a very conservative line there, allowed their economy to begin to grow again, thus get increased taxes in that allowed him to pay for some of the things he wanted to do. And for all this, he was considered controversial, mostly because some thought he was a nationalist because he was more focused on Japan's future than continuing to apologize for its past. He didn't want to get drug into a conversation with China where he was continuously apologizing for Japan's acts in China during World War II. He wanted to talk about the future and talk about China as the threat. So it's a real blow, but it also gives us a moment to pause and think about the great things that he did in bringing Japan really up to speed and again, modernizing its military.
Well, Captain Jerry Hendricks, Shinzo Abe also was very outspoken that the United States should drop its strategic ambiguity position regarding Taiwan, which Joe Biden apparently did before it was walked back. I know you've served with Japanese forces. I've served with Japanese forces. It's a very interesting military culture, very different than ours. But it has some major capabilities. Do you think Japan will continue its path to being a full security partner rather than kind of a second tier military power, which it kind of has been, as it is limited by Article 9 of its constitution?
I think it is going to continue to evolve towards, again, a more realistic security posture in the Pacific. The Chinese threat simply compels it to do so. Abe was able to elevate the conversation, and I'm sure his death and the conversation is going to go on within Japan and in Eastern Asia following his death as they consider his legacy is just going to continue this impetus towards becoming more realistic and approach the world. So I think that we'll continue to see Japan spend more, spend wisely, to spend in more modern weapons, the types of missiles, mines, aircraft, and ships that it's going to require. It's been a major partner. Obviously, we have a lot of forward-deployed naval forces there. We have an aircraft carrier that's based in Japan. We have Destroyer Squadron 15, our largest destroyer squadron, which does a lot of ballistic missile defense for North Korea, as well as starting to look at China now. That's there in Japan. We have an amphibious ready group in Japan. And Japan has given us a lot of financial support to help us logistically support those units. I suspect that they're going to continue to do that in increased levels.
Well, Captain Jerry Hendricks, retired United States Navy, we do need to be prepared for China because, as your recent article discusses, China is now launching carriers, maybe not comparable to our super carriers, but very, very capable. Tell us a little about that development and how the United States, if it is trying to address this major strategic change.
So I wrote about this because China launched 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago today, actually 3 weeks ago today. They launched their new type of 003 aircraft carrier. Now, they've had two aircraft carriers, but these are what we call short takeoff, arrested gear landing, or STOBAR carriers. But now they've got a catapult-assisted takeoff carrier, sort of a super carrier, much like what we have.
It's not as big as ours.
It's not. It's 80,000 tons versus our 100,000-ton carriers, but it's about the size of our old Forrestal class, which were the first super carriers that we built in the 1950s. It's got three catapults. It's going to be able to handle modern aircraft. It's going to be able to launch large, heavy aircraft so that it can go long range. They'll be able to project power against targets across the Pacific. They'll be able to do sea control. This is a very significant step, and they've made this step very quickly. You know, we started building aircraft carriers in 1922. We didn't build our first super carrier, a modern carrier, until the 1950s. China has gone from building essentially its starter carrier in 2012, and boom, they have a super carrier now just 10 years later. They're moving very quickly. Now, I want to point out that they still haven't proven themselves at this. They haven't done the aircraft. They haven't gotten to an air wing of 60 airplanes, been able to cycle 30 off the front and catch 30 onto the back in the same event. Those are advanced things that the United States Navy does every day. China's going to have to grow that. But the fact is they're heading there, and they're heading there very quickly. And they have two more of these supercarriers in construction on the ways. And they have an industrial base that's just out of this world. I mean, one of their shipyards equals the capacity of all of our shipyards in the United States combined. They are a huge juggernaut in shipbuilding. And I'm very concerned about the pace of their advance.
Well, Captain Hendricks, so am I. One advantage that the United States had relied on since World War II is our institutional knowledge. We understand carrier operations better than any nation on Earth. We honed it during World War II. During the Cold War, we conducted carrier operations every day all over the world. We're still doing that. If you watch Top Gun, you get some idea of what's going on. And a lot of Americans have watched Top Gun. We have a lot of institutional knowledge, a lot of naval tradition in the United States. China is not traditionally a naval power, certainly not the way the United States is. However, we have seen the Navy and other branches of the American forces demonstrate that they may have lost a lot of their edge. We've had collisions. We've had leadership failures. And it's pretty striking. How long are we going to be able to rely on the force multiplier that is experience and tradition and institutional knowledge? Right now, I think it's an advantage. Is it going to be an advantage in 5 years?
That's the tipping point issue. And we started looking at this almost a decade ago, and I've been raising concerns about the efficacy of our aircraft carriers now for a better part of 8 years. So when I wrote my first essay on this back in 2013, the problem we have is we've begun to divest of longer range assets and more advanced aircraft off from our carrier deck. We've been investing really in sort of short range to medium range light attack aircraft. So we're not taking full advantage of the aircraft carrier and what it can bring to the fight. China seems to be doing a lot of work on unmanned aircraft from its carriers that could transform their carrier capacity. We don't seem to have a big interest in the idea of an unmanned.
Is that because the manned aircraft constituency within the Navy refuses to admit what I think is the obvious, that unmanned aircraft are the wave of the future?
Yeah, I think so. And in fact, I've watched Top Gun. I've gone to see the new
fun movie
several times, because as a naval aviator, you always want to go see, watch the guys having fun going booming.
Yep.
But the fact is I was struck by the idea that the profile within the movie, and I actually wrote about this in National Review a couple of weeks ago, could have been better conducted by an unmanned combat aerial vehicle without really threat to the aircraft or to the men. We don't seem to be wanting to embrace the future. We seem to be trapped into the past in the way that we think about carrier aviation. China seems to be looking for an edge. You know, they're the upstart country with a chip on its shoulder. They're looking for a way ahead. And so they seem to be making these investments in an accelerated fashion. I think that we could still save carrier aviation if we doubled down now on unmanned and got some more of that on board the carrier deck quickly, but we don't seem to be up to that challenge just yet.
Well, I appreciate it, Jerry Hendricks. We're up against a hard break. This is Kurt Schlichter, Hewitt's guest host today. We will be right back.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Program at the Relief Factor Studio in beautiful Southern California. I am a retired United States Army colonel. I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, senior columnist at townhall.com, and the author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, the new book coming out from Regnery. It drops on Tuesday. You should get it. We are following a tragic story from Japan, a great friend of America, a great Japanese patriot, former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, murdered by an assassin while campaigning for a parliamentary candidate. There's more footage coming out. It was apparently some sort of homemade cannon. They say it's a gun. Looks more like a cannon of some sort. More information will be inbound. They do have the assassin in custody. Initial reports seem to be that the man is mentally disturbed. We'll be tracking this. But it's a dark day for Japan. And it's a dark day for America. Shinzo Abe was a great friend of the United States, a great friend of freedom, and a great advocate for his country. America's thoughts and prayers are with the Japanese people today. And I am joined now by a guest who's new to the Hugh Hewitt radio program. He's Marion Smith, president and CEO of the Common Sense Society. And I think we have lots to talk about. Marion, can you tell us a little about what the Common Sense Society is?
Sure. The Common Sense Society is an educational foundation active in the United States and Europe. And we promote liberty, prosperity, and beauty. And we do that through hosting educational fellowships for young professionals and young scholars. And we have several open right now. Those are six-day-long programs. We encourage your listeners to apply or to recommend that someone apply. We're hosting those in South Carolina, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and Hungary over the next few months. We also produce curricular resources for middle and high school students, including basic economics and civics, and host teacher seminars, which are going to happen also in Florida this month. So I'll be down there with about 100 teachers for 3 days. We want to fight for our civilization, which begins with introducing new generations to it. And, of course, shoring up our own principles here in the United States. We have a great country, and I hope we're not the first generation to leave it worse off than we found it.
Well, you know, I recently wrote a book about those very same topics, so I think we're kind of tracking. I was following your Twitter account, at Smith Marion, Smith, just like it sounds, Marion, and you offered your condolences to Shinzo Abe. What does the murder of the former prime minister of Japan say about our first world culture? Because Japan is closely integrated in many ways to the rest of the world, and this seems so alien to Japan, even though it does have a history of political assassinations.
Right, including going back to the 1930s when there was a lot of political violence. Not only in Japan, but of course in Weimar Germany and even here in the United States. So I sadly think it follows a general trend of an uptick in political violence and highly charged ideological political movements right across the Western world. And, you know, Japan has been considered a Western country since World War II. And, you know, I had, you know, my grandfather fight in the Pacific Theater against the Japanese. His brother was a Navy pilot and shot down in that theater. In fact, in my office, I've got a mortar round that my grandfather brought back on the ship from an island.
Gosh, I hope it was deactivated.
It certainly was.
Yeah, I think it's interesting the way, obviously, Japan has been reintegrated into the world community after World War II. I had the privilege of serving over there with the Japanese on a couple of major exercises. Very interesting culture. But throughout the First World, we're seeing more political violence, and some of it is even political violence by the government directed at citizens. If you look at what is happening in Holland, the Netherlands, where the Common Sense Society is doing some training, as you just mentioned, the police are firing on peaceful protesters.
You're absolutely right. And just to note something on Abe, he is someone who in Japan navigated this very difficult cultural situation of behaving a little bit more like a nationalist in Japan, but developing closer ties with the United States, especially on the issue of communist China. And so it remains to be seen, you know, how the conservative leaning party in Japan is going to see its way forward. And it's vitally important, of course. We face huge challenges in East Asia and across the world, mostly because of the threat posed by communist China, which makes it all the more disturbing that in Western countries like the Netherlands, we have governments who are treating citizens, you know, in a way that we would recognize more so in a totalitarian state than in Western Europe, a so-called liberal democracy. But the farmer protests going on right now in the Netherlands are unprecedented. They've been building for many months, but it is a response by the Dutch farmers against efforts to shut down a great percentage of the farms in the Netherlands.
And I think Marion Smith, at Common Sense Society, what we're seeing is kind of a pattern. I'm holding up my book again. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America, because I talk about it. We're seeing kind of a conflict between nationalists, that is, people and politicians who believe that the first job of a nation's politicians is to take care of their own nation. Doesn't mean you know, harm others, but your own nation is your priority. And then kind of a transnational globalist sensibility where you respond, as in the Netherlands, to some sort of nebulous, unaccountable global elite that tells you, yeah, you got to get rid of half of your farmers because the angry weather goddess will feel blasphemed if you don't. And we're seeing that all over the world. We're seeing that here in America with, you know, President Gumby destroying the American energy industry for no good reason other than to satisfy global warming cultists in Marin County in Manhattan.
Well, you know, I'm one of those who absolutely recognizes that globalization is a fact. And I do think that free trade is a wonderful thing. And there has been, you know, more integration with economies across the world. But, you know, it's a fallacy to think that you can have free trade with a slave state.
Yes.
Like communist China.
That's true.
So we've relied on dogma too much in the sort of freedom movement over the last few decades, and it has come to hurt us. When it comes to the Netherlands, you know, they produce they're the number two exporter of agricultural goods in
yeah,
the world
who knew?
After the United States. And that's incredible when you think that it's only a country of 17 million people. So they're highly productive. Their farmers are some of the most environmentally conscious in the world. But the United States and Europe and other countries rely on those exports from the Netherlands. And why would we hurt our ability to feed our populations in a world where we know countries like China will use our dependence on basic foodstuffs and other things that we depend on in the supply chain for political reasons?
No, absolutely. The Chinese understand that the priority of the Chinese government is China. And I understand that. I don't expect them to do anything else. But unfortunately, our own government seems to think it has some sort of higher responsibility than to the American people. Dealing with the you know, the kind of Davos elitist agenda, which is absolutely unaccountable. I don't remember voting for it, is their priority. And it is somehow nationalist to actually favor your nation. Are we going to see that come around as the populists rise? So we only have a few seconds, and I'd like you to also tell you where you can find out more about the Common Sense Society.
Sure. Well, that confrontation is an intellectual one, but it's playing out practically, and it's affecting daily lives of people throughout our civilization. And you see it on the streets of the Netherlands with, you know, tens of thousands of tractors now blocking streets and intersections, including in Amsterdam. And they are pointing out the fallacy of the Netherlands hurting its own farmer population while China is building hundreds and hundreds of new coal plants. So if it's about the global environmental reality, it's not doing much.
Well, thank you, Marion Smith of the Common Sense Society. Follow him at Smith Marion on Twitter and check him out. We'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. Stick around. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. And that bumper music is a subtle reminder that my new book will be back. The Fall and Rise of America will be out from Regnery on Tuesday. I have looked at the numbers. The Audible version seems to be the best-selling version on Amazon at the moment, but you can get in hardcover, you can get in Kindle. What's important is that you get it. Who am I, besides the author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America? I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, senior columnist at townhall.com, retired United States Army colonel, and I am distinctly honored to welcome the representative from Indiana's 3rd District, Jim Banks, United States Navy veteran. Representative Banks, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Hey, Kurt, good to be with you. Looking forward to reading the book and very proud of you for turning the show over to the United States Navy this morning. I know Jerry Hendricks, my friend, was on a little bit ago and glad to pick it up from there.
You swabbies are unbearable. Yeah, you know, there no SEAL can walk by a camera or mic without talking. You've got Top Gun going. And now this. This is an outrage, but I respect the Navy. It's an important support element for the decisive branch of combat power, the United States Army. But I want to ask you about something in the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. I saw our mutual friend Adam Schiff, who everyone knows is honest and competent, according to my unicorn, and he's offering an amendment that would exclude evidence not only from trials, but even from use in from being received into evidence in legislative committees of evidence gathered by a military member in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. Posse Comitatus, and I've written a law review article which talked about this and other similar subjects, is the law that prevents active duty federal military personnel from, for the most part, conducting law enforcement agencies. Have you heard of this? And what is this little weasel trying to hide?
Well, when I first saw this last night, when Julie Kelly exposed it on Twitter and brought a lot of attention to it. My first instinct was to go to the January 6th committee and assume that this had a lot to do with that. And I think it probably does, which raises a lot of questions. What type of information is the United States military gathering that's useful to the sham January 6th committee, which means that a lot of us who sit on the Armed Services Committee need to start asking those questions in upcoming hearings. But then when I started peeling back the layers of the amendment, I realized, no, this is a lot bigger than that. I mean, Democrats know that a red wave midterm election is right in front of us. Democrats know we're going to win back the majority, that guys like Jim Jordan are going to be chairman of powerful committees. Jim Jordan, the right man, the right place at the right time, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. All of our committees have an oversight function. So on the Armed Services Committee, one of the very first investigations that we're going to launch into is related to the debacle in Afghanistan. And this shift amendment would protect them from turning over evidence related to that as we launch investigations into situations like Afghanistan. So it's not just January 6th, it's Afghanistan. It's a lot of the other investigations that we plan to launch into that Schiff is trying to protect the administration from not turning over related documents that we'll need to conduct that type of oversight.
Well, Representative Jim Banks, I actually spent about an hour on the phone with Julie Kelly last night talking about that. I worked extensively with Posse Comitatus issues as a United States Army officer. And tell your staff they're free to give me a call if they'd like to discuss it further, because I think there are some nuances there. But look, if Adam Schiff is doing it, there's something going on and there's something dirty. But you mentioned oversight, and oversight is key. And I want to ask you, if the Republicans were in power today, what kind of oversight would they be doing of this revelation that Hunter Biden connected Sinotech, some sort of Chinese company that apparently Hunter Biden has some sort of interest in, was the recipient of a large amount of the oil released from the United States Strategic Reserve that was sent over to China. What would you guys be doing if you were in charge now? Because as long as these Democrats are in charge, we're never going to get any oversight of the administration.
Yeah, this is crazy, but it shouldn't be surprising to anybody. It's just a new example of the corruption that we knew already existed. The Biden family is the most corrupt family to ever occupy the White House, and that's saying a lot after the Clintons.
Yes.
But we knew this already, that the laptop told us this. It told us that the Biden family is deeply entangled with our greatest adversaries, including the Chinese Communist Party, including Russia, entanglements into the worst parts of Ukraine. They've taken millions of dollars. We know that Joe Biden was skimming money off the top and profiting himself from the access that his son was selling to these foreign adversaries when Joe was vice president. And now we can assume that those activities are still continuing today. So I talked about Jim Jordan a little bit ago. I know one of his very first objectives is going to be to launch an investigation into Hunter Biden, his business activities, and the family to expose this even further. I can tell you, I mean, we already know it. We know that if this was Donald Trump Jr., they would have impeached Donald Trump already.
The 15th time? How many times did they impeach him already? I lost count.
On a third impeachment right now. I mean, this is insane. When they impeached Donald Trump for stuff that he didn't do, but the Biden family did do. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. And we have a moral duty as Republicans to launch into these investigations and hold the Biden administration and these Democrats accountable for their abuse of power. And I guarantee you on day one, that's going to be a primary objective of the Republican majority come January.
Well, Representative Jim Banks, I got to tell you, I talked to a lot of people in the base, and a lot of people are a little nervous because, you know, for a long time we had go-along, get-along folks running the Republican Party who refused to take a hard stand. They wanted to get back to business as usual, clinking the glasses with the donors and stuff. And some of them are a little suspicious that the new Republican Congress is going to be fully committed to doing its legitimate oversight, not seeking vengeance, but actually monitoring and doing a fair but thorough job of vetting the activities of the executive branch. Can you assure our listeners that from the top down, from future Speaker McCarthy down to the rank and file members of the Republican Party, that they are going to fairly and honestly but firmly pursue all leads, even when it becomes embarrassing and uncomfortable as far as oversight?
Yeah, I can assure you that we're already planning. I was in Leader McCarthy, the next Speaker of the House's office, last week with Jim Jordan, Jamie Comer, who's going to lead the oversight committee, a lot of the other ranking members who are going to become chairmen and chairwomen of all of the powerful committees. And Leader McCarthy stresses this every day. It is a primary role of the Congress to provide oversight. And all of the committees have an oversight function and role. So I serve on Armed Services Committee. We have oversight of the Pentagon. And as I already said, Afghanistan is going to be a major objective. This isn't the go-along, get-along Republican Party anymore. And the biggest reason why is because this is the party of Donald Trump. And his fingerprints are all over the Republican Party, up and down the ranks of representatives, senators who came, you know, like myself, who came to Washington with Donald Trump or after he was elected. He taught us how to fight back, and if there is ever a time to fight back, it's right now. I understand the skepticism, Kurt. I get it, because we've seen it time and time again with Republicans who didn't live up to the promises that they made on the campaign trail. And when we get the majority back, we have got to do what we said we were going to do. And the first part of that is holding this administration accountable.
Well, Representative Jim Banks, Indiana 3rd District. Now, you are onto something. And you got to understand that the Republican base are the abused wives of American politics, because they have been betrayed again and again by alleged conservatives who talked a good game and then went to Washington and did not do what they said they would do. Now, I am sure we will take the House back. I am almost positive we will take the Senate back, but we will not have the presidency, at least for two more years. And during that time, I see there are three things you can do. You can do oversight. You can stop things by refusing to pass appropriations, and you can compromise where possible. Is there anything else you can do, and how can we make the base understand that we are doing what we can within the system, with the limitation that we don't hold the executive at least till January 2025?
Yeah, I think we'll have a lot of leverage. I mean, you think about the spending bills, the potential for government shutdowns, and leveraging that to force this administration to do things that the American people are begging them to do, like securing the border, like bringing back the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, and doing what we can to make America energy independent again, passing balanced budgets and getting back to fiscal responsibility. So we'll have leverage to push the administration to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do with the threat of government shutdowns at the feet of Joe Biden, the president. So we've got to use that leverage. And I believe that the leadership of the Republican Party, at least I can only speak for the House. I know that our leadership is prepared for that, prepared to wield that leverage and use the power that we have for oversight, tie up all of these agencies of the federal government, and take a page from the Democrats' playbook, what they did to Donald Trump for 4 years, and use that same type of intensity that we have in the House to tie up these agencies to stop them from doing more harm to American businesses, American employers, American families.
Well, Representative Jim Banks, sounds good to me. If you're asking for advice, and you're probably not, but you're getting it anyway, transparency and clarity about what you intend to do, just like you would talk to your sailors and just like I would talk to my soldiers. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what we're doing. Trust me and earn that trust. Representative Jim Banks, one of the good ones here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. Stick around. And I am joined now by Tarzana Joe. Hi, Joe. How's it going on the Hugh Hewitt radio program today?
I'm doing fine. And yourself?
Oh, I am full of vim and vinegar. I don't know what that means, but I'm...
That's a salad dressing that they use at Chipotle, I think.
exactly. And I sprinkle me with feta. And you, I don't know what that means either. It's a poem. I'm doing verse, but you're the expert in verse. What do you have for us today?
You know, I follow you on Twitter, and I notice that you often use the First Amendment to speak forcefully about the Second Amendment.
Oh, yes.
And I hope so does this poem.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
There's a lesson in this madness that the media's been hiding. Laws are only useful to control the law-abiding. Pass the prohibitions that you think you want or need, and rest on my assurance that the honest will take heed. That won't produce solutions to the problems that you're after. The chorus from the lawless will be little more than laughter. Propose reforms so sensible majorities endorse them, but laws are only useful if your DAs will enforce them. And in their leftist wisdom that's as lawless as secession, they wield another weapon. I think it's called discretion. Here in L.A. County, you read it every day. A felon with a gun? Well, we'll just look the other way. Step across a line that would put both of us in jail, and they're looking for a reason to eliminate their bail. So there isn't any measure which will cure, as if by magic, the scenes that we see weekly which are horrible and tragic. I'm not senseless to these horrors, and I'm not a great debater. But with what they're proposing, I see horrors that are greater. Criminals so fearless and the state so supersized that the innocent civilian, by both, is victimized.
Wow, Tarzana Joe, a moving tribute to the Second Amendment and the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Thank you very much. Now, look, if I were in the need of verse and I wish to commission poetry, how might I go about doing that from you, Tarzana Joan, poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt radio program?
Well, say you wanted a verse to start each chapter of your new book, just a scene.
Are you referring to We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America from Regnery Books?
Then you would just contact me at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com or TarzanaJoe@Hotmail.com or go to iwantapoem on the TarzanaJoe.com page. We work together.
I love that idea, and you may be hearing from me about an ode to the Third Amendment. So okay. we'll keep that in mind. Thank you, Tarzana Joe.
Thank you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.